This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Tech, show number 123, recorded on June 20th, 2013. Here at Home Tech, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska. Really warm Bellevue, Nebraska. I mean, the summer is on its way, and it's going to be ugly. There's just nothing uglier than a summer in Nebraska. And, of course, we post the show each week with world-class show notes, although Andrew's been doing less of them, and I've been doing more, so maybe not so world-class, out at the Average Guy. TV. If you have questions or comments or contributions, you can just contact the show. Send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. You can also find me on Twitter @JayCollison or follow the show schedule on our Twitter account @TheAverageGuy.tv. You can also join us for live chat during the show over at TheAverageGuy.tv. If you've joined us on YouTube, and a couple of you have done that, you're watching the YouTube video. If you're not at TheAverageGuy.tv/live, head over there when you get a chance. We have both the YouTube video and the live stream window that's out there, and right to the right of live stream is the chat. No account required to do that, just to sign in with a nickname into the live stream chat, and you can chat with us. There's a couple guys out there now and some great conversations going in chat, so we'd love to have you over there as well. All right, we got a great show for you tonight. We missed the home server show last night. Dave was on vacation, and so I asked Dave if we could move a lot of home server chat to Thursday night. So hopefully you'll get your home server show fix here on Thursday night at 8 o'clock, and we're glad that you've joined us. Sitting to my right, and the guy who used to co-host with me over there all the time, and I get him back about once a month, John Zadler. John, how are you?
Hi, Jim. Hi, Paul. Hello, everybody. All the listeners. Everybody, thanks for listening. I gotta remind myself to talk. Thank the listeners for listening to me, putting up with me.
Yeah.
For an hour or so.
Well, John, it's always good to have you on. Let's just do a quick. We haven't seen you in a couple weeks. What you been up to?
I have actually been playing around with my Nintendo Wii. You know, all this stuff that's been going around with, you know, the Xbox One and PlayStation and stuff like that. I said, you know what, let me just dig out. You know, I have a 360, but I use it more as a media center. And then I said, you know what, let me get all my games together with my Nintendo Wii. And what I did is I did a software hack, which is what I did is I installed a small 2.5-inch laptop drive, because the Wii has a USB ports on the back. And and with that software hack, what I'm able to do is copy my CDs to the game CDs to the hard drive, and then you end up having a menu and you select your games that way. So I was just getting all my collection together, because I had a bunch of, you know, I mean, these games are like $50-$60, you know. Right. Microsoft, right. They kind of put a scare into me when they're talking about all that you know, lending games and this and that, and you can't. So I says, let me find all those games, because even the other day I was looking for some GameCube games, you know, these little guys, there's some old, I say, where are those things? You start to misplace your stuff. So this is what's good about having a server or in this case, you know, a laptop drive, and you copy your games there, and you have your backup there. So that's what I've been playing around, trying to get all my games together for my for my Wii. And then, you know, just it's old school, you know, so you put it there, and then you never play with it again.
The trick is just getting the stuff on there. You don't actually want to play it. You just want to get the stuff on there so you know you can, right?
Yeah. Well, that's it. I want to make sure I have everything in the place.
Right. Yeah, it's not about function afterwards. It's about the form of getting it all in and knowing you can do it. So,
yeah.
Well, John, always good to have you back. And John joins us about once a month here on Home Tech. So, John, welcome back. To his right, Paul Brerin. Of course, Paul's been on a bunch lately, as we've talked about virtualization, and we talked about laptops. And I think, John, we had John when we talked about the network as well. Paul, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. That was a really heartwarming opening from John. That was just awesome. hearing him talk about his projects, right? That's what we all tune in for, just to listen to him go on so quickly, so enthusiastically right away. Yeah. Here's what I've been up to. It's just great.
I know. I don't get enough Zadler time these days. I need to spend some more intentional time just talking to Zadler on the weekends.
Same here. It brings back fond memories of last summer, cruising around on the mower and listening to him, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, let's dig right in. We're here to talk about home server stuff. And, John, I know you're keeping track of it all the time. And so let's dig right in. What do you want to go to first?
Let me see. One of the things I saw coming up was the for Stablebit Scanner. There's add-in, you know, for that, for Windows Home Server, the different versions and stuff. So now they're at a point where they're releasing its version 2.4. And I think that, yeah, release final. So we'll put a link in the show notes on that one. And so basically it's an add-in for the different versions of Windows Home Server. I mean, they support Windows Home Server 2011 and also Server 2013. And it's to, you know, scan your drives and, you know, check for errors. And he's adding some extra. He's always been trying to improve the...
Paul, is John skipping for you?
Yeah, he just froze up. His mouth is open.
Let's give him a sec. He'll drop and come back in here in just a second. There we go. You're back.
We got two Johns.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. You locked up. So just go back. Just go back a smidge.
Yeah. So stable bit to scanner. So he's always been updating the software. So this is nice to see that there's you know, there continues to be support for it, and he's kind of like. Finalizing this version 2.4, which allows it to check some automatic file checking system. Because sometimes he talks about some files, and sometimes your drives, you know, if you don't go over, there's a word that he uses there. It's like, you know, let's say you have some stuff on your hard drive and you haven't got to it for a while. It's like, are those sectors still like viable or what? So it's like you can kind of go back and scan.
Is it like BitRock? Yeah.
Okay. There you go. Yeah. So he's working on that. So that's if you know if that's the kind of add-in, and obviously the other thing is he has the other add-in that they have for the drive pooling, and if you want buy one or buy two of them, he has a nice discount going there. So that's a good thing. The second one, it costs you only $15. I think it's $10 or $15.
Let me throw that up on the screen there real quick. So this is his 2.4 final release. And some automatic file checking and scanned sector aging. Is that what you're talking about, John, when it says the scan sector aging of checking for bit rot?
Better handling
removable media? Yeah, he just keeps updating this, doesn't he? That's Alex, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's nice. It's a good. It's a full, you know, it's a full add-in. It's not like some just little... software, you know, that does a couple of little things. It's a full...
I still need to buy that. You know, I've messed around with the trial versions for a while, and just have not purchased that. And it's pretty reasonable, so we should go out and give that a look. All right, what else you got?
The other thing I saw, let me see, was DriveBender. So it's like, you know, StableBit has their drive pooling software, and DriveBender has their version. So what's nice to see is there's a competition going there, and those guys recently came out with the version. 1.9.1.0, and he's talking about some bug fixes. Some folders shared by Windows are not visible at boot. So it's nice to see that there's an update for that guy.
And I think, John, they're still running a 50% off sale. I've dropped that out there for folks to see. It says 50% off sale, offer available on the next 200 licenses only. It's been out there for a little bit, but I did take advantage of this. They were doing like a $10 sale. Basically, it took the $20 license and made it $10. I think that was right. It was a while back. So if you didn't take advantage of it right now, if you're not using DriveBender, you might want to just pick it up and have it for something. I know a lot of guys are working on the virtualization side of things, but this might be a nice one to just pick up and have.
Yeah, it's always good. My brother there, one of his customers, I installed DrivePool. Yeah, DrivePool. And when I went to buy it for them, I took advantage. I said, let me get a second license for the StableBit for the scanner. Because like I said, if you buy one, you know, you can get the other one at a cheaper price. Yeah. Here they have, like you said, a special every once in a while. It rolls around. You get 50% off or $10 off or whatever. So like they're really good price add-in. So it's good to have them, like you say, maybe in your toolbox or what. And there you go. I think I'm going to have to even get a couple of add-ins, a couple of versions or licenses, because I play around between my different versions of my servers, you know. And one of the things it checks is it says you have to deauthorize on that server and then authorize on this one. So it's like, you know what, for the $20 or $15 or $28, just get yourself an extra license and you're good to go.
Yeah, these guys at Division M, I'm still amazed that they continue to push out releases. I mean, they must be making some sales, and that must be going okay. I mean, enough to continue the development on this. So, You know, I'm wondering, guys, with the resurgence of, you know, with the resurgence of the microservers, as we've seen in our community, I'm sure it's just not limited to ours, but I wonder if that has picked up business for them, as we've recommended a lot, you know, that they make their way to Windows Home Server 2011 for, because that's a cheap version. You can still get it. It's $40 or $50 for most people.
I saw it this week again, $35. Somebody in the forums there posted it that it was like $34.99. So you're saying, wow, you know, and that's, I mean, I don't want to knock the people too much who are running Synology and stuff like that, but you know, you buy the Synology, it has this little add-ins and stuff like that, it does this box, it's great for a lot of people. But then when you turn around and you say, you know what, I can buy a server, like that's where I'm coming from. So it's like I can buy like a server OS for $35, and I can play around with a lot of stuff. You know, I can bang on it and try this and try that. So there's a lot of flexibility, and it's like $35, it's incredible. You know, buy four.
yeah, four for the price of one. It's a pretty good deal. If folks, if you're a listener to Home Tech and you haven't made your way over to homeservershow.com, I don't know how many of those there are. Our listeners' ship has picked up in the last couple months, and you're wondering what we're talking about. Homeservershow.com, you can join the forums. Lots of chat around Synology and Home Server and Windows Home Server and HP, you know, microservers and those kinds of things. So if you're interested in that at all, head over to homeservershow.com/forums. And Paul, what are you throwing up there?
Oh, just a shout out to the audience there. You've got Rennie tweeting about our event live, right?
Yeah, very nice, guys. But, yeah, good work.
Yep.
Thanks, Rennie. Rennie's always a good guy. Always joins us each and every week. John, what else do you got?
The last thing that I wanted to talk about as far as updates is these guys at Electron Goo. They've come out with a lot of add-ins. They've been around since, I think, 2007 or 2009. They've come out with Time Machine for Windows Server version 1, and they have a few of them. So, like, these guys, you know, they've been consistent. Snoop-de-doop, one of our favorites.
Snoop-de-doop.
And stuff, Integrity Checker and stuff. So, and now, you know, with the Windows Home Server 2011 and Server 2012 Essentials, you know, they're keeping up to, you know, they're with their add-ins. And one of them that they that I saw here, and I was thanks to Philip Churchill over at MSWHS. He's the guy that kind of, you know, I'm still, you know, there's not too many Windows Home Server sites that you can kind of go and get some information and, you know, pull some in. So he's one of my. Yeah,
it's really slowing down. He's still doing it though, right?
Yeah. So. He got me going on the on this one. It's an add-in called Personal Online Backup Host (OBH) software. So it's another option where you know, like in your previous podcast, you're always talking about your, you know, your backup strategies and all the CrashPond and everything that's out there. And I think just recently, didn't you talk about another one called what's it? Is it called OC? What's the one I'm thinking about? You talked about the backup one recently.
Which
I forget the name.
Not ringing a bell. It'll come here in a second.
It'll come back to
me
later.
My brain works like an old AS400. It just takes a while for the query to come back.
So what's nice is that this version of their software is it's a little bit of an advanced add-in. You know, you have to get it going, and you have to install it. It's like a regular Windows Home Server add-in WSSX extension. You install it, but then you have to go in, and in my case, I had to go in and set up a IIS, you know, which is the web server stuff, because what you're doing is basically you're setting up your server as for backups. And then you have your clients could be either at home or, you know, off-site, and they're using your server as their backup. So instead of paying like another company to upload their stuff to somebody else's server, they're sending it to you. So you know how we've played around with CrashPlan and this and that. So this is another option, but it's using Windows Home Server the software. So. I mean, obviously the thing is you got to be running Windows Home Server. If you're just running your PCs and you want to use, you know, go ahead, use CrashPlan and some of the other ones there that, you know, you just use them and that's it. But if you do have a Windows Home Server, you say, hey, you know, what else can I get going on my home server? Well, this is a nice add-in, and it's in the works, and it's, you know, it's something new. So there's, he's set up some forums, and there's some comments there. And what I like about when guys start going with new add-ins is, you know, they're open to people's ideas, and you know, it's like, and if people say, hey, you know, I don't like the way how this is happening, this and that, you know, because it's not already baked, the added, it's you can give some input and suggest what you like about it, what you don't like, and now in this stage they can modify it and give you those choices and maybe explain to you how things are going. So that's it. I'm at the point. So far there's three parts, and I've set up the server. So now I'm waiting for the next part, and I'm gonna install the client software and see how that compares to some of the other stuff. So maybe on a future podcast we can talk about this.
How long have you been working with it?
It's only about a week.
Okay.
I've read it. Like I said, it's more of an advanced add-in, so you have to kind of read and kind of follow along. Eventually, I think the developer said that it'll be like a one-click install. It'll do all the IIS stuff and set you all up. But for now, you have to go through a couple of hoops, So if you're just if you're not comfortable with playing around with your server and that, then maybe hold off until it becomes a more finished product. But in the meantime, it's so you got to put a little bit of elbow grease into it.
So yeah.
That's what I like.
$15, John, is what they're selling that for?
I didn't right even... no, I think it's around... They're selling like a $30. I think you pay $30 a year, but it's a renewed every year. And because they also have an add-in called Archive Manager. And this is so I was getting a little bit confused. What was the difference between their Archive Manager and their add-in called Personal Online Backup Host? So that one is like $30. I think that's $30.
Paul, what'd you say?
I was just saying Canadian dollars. Little difference.
Rennie's making a point in chat, though. There, you can use CrashPlan for a very similar type of functionality here, where. Oh, we lost John again. Gee. Oh, you're back.
It's like his lower third is crashing him, right? His lower third keeps disappearing. He comes back without it.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. John, are you using the Hangout Toolbox? Oh, he locked up again. He may need to reboot to come back in. Well, the good news is he has an open invitation. So Rennie was saying in chat while we bring John back in, CrashPlan's free and easy to use for offsite backup. So, in this case, there's been a big movement towards really building your own private cloud. I mean, Paul, how many I don't know about you, but with my work account, with my Gallup.com account, I just get spammed for webinars and seminars. And are you seeing an uptick in that in your business email?
Actually, IBM spam filters are pretty strong, okay. But on the outside, I get tons of it.
But even these even some of these are legit. I mean, they're very software, companies trying to do webinars and stuff around real life stuff, VMware or,
I get a ton of those.
Oracle
legitimate
stuff.
Ones that have companies that I have a relationship with, sure, I get a ton.
So it seems like there's been an uptick in that. And one of the things, I guess one of the buzzwords right now is your own private, your own private cloud. So to speak, go ahead, Paul.
You're talking to the right folks here, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you've got bandwidth caps looming and Cox sending you and I nasty grams every month.
Yeah.
And you keep exceeding my cap.
Me too.
And you've got me with 4 or 5 terabytes of personal videos from the kids growing up, stuff that's very personal and staying that way. No need to upload it. So there's still something there.
Yeah.
That's how I got into home server years ago anyway, starting to try to back up the 3-4 terabytes of stuff.
Right. John, you're back. Keep dropping.
What's going on, eh?
I don't know. maybe Google doesn't like what you're saying tonight around that. And Paul, I have been, ProgoPlug is also one of those companies. John, we were just talking about kind of your own private cloud, so to speak. And we've been in that business for a long time. Here, both Home Server Show and a lot of the stuff that we talk about. PogoPlug is in that space, as well as, this connected data, the folks that are merging with Drobo. And it'll be interesting to see. I can't do a podcast without mentioning Drobo. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out from them. And John, I probably shouldn't say this. John tells me that they're really going to work hard to get that functionality. So I have the 5N now. The kids bought me that for my birthday. And they're going to work hard to get that connected data software loaded on the 5N. It'll come as part of it. It'll come like an app on that. And so I can create, it'll be that what Drobo's been missing for the longest time was that component of me being able to get to my data from the cloud. I could always attach something else to it and make it work that way. But it, thanks to him, it will kind of round that out. So interesting to see, John, that these guys are coming at that from that angle as well.
Was that software called OwnCloud?
We did talk about OwnCloud. Yeah, what was that? God, what was the context of that? I think Christian brought that up about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Something he was looking for, because he wasn't taking his PC with him when he went to the internship at Langley. So he wanted to be able to access the stuff on his computer back at home. And they somehow stumbled across OwnCloud. OWN?
Yeah,
own cloud?
It's like having your own cloud. So I don't know if you're setting it up on your server or you're setting up your sort of like your hidden space online or what, but there's all kinds of options. So these are another one that it's something that's taking off. And like I said, if you have your home server and give this a try. There's a 60-day trial with all the options that are working. So give it a look and maybe even participate. Like I said, because it's in development, give us suggestions of what you would like to see and so forth, and then maybe they can put that in there.
Yeah, and let's not forget too, OwnCloud is open source. That's one of the things that Christian really liked about it. John, you talk about the angle of sometimes when you jump on these add-ins when they're new, you can have a big influence over the developers, right? They're looking for our feedback on that. OwnCloud, of course, is open source, and you can make contributions to it if that's what you want to do from a development standpoint. OwnCloud, though, looks a little bit, it's kind of like a SharePoint-esque. It's got a file system, it's got a calendar associated with it, and some other things that you can get from the software. So, cool. Paul,
It's good that you have that guide so that people can go in there and say,
yeah,
hey,
the
what's the advantage of different ones? Yeah.
We have not talked about the cloud, cloud storage Know-It guide in a while. I actually took down the links for it. If you just go out to theaverageguide.tv/cloud-storage, you'll see I've got about 15 or 20 of the current cloud offerings kind of broken down a little bit. We tried to make it average guy in the offering out there. So you can see the ones I've looked at. And then I probably have another 20 that I haven't even gotten to yet, and I've been so busy with other stuff that I just I've kind of let that go by the wayside. But theaverageguide.tv/cloud-storage if you want to take a peek at that. All the pricing is out there as well. So seems like everybody and their brother is going into the cloud storage business these days. And so if you can, what I'm waiting for, the guys at Division M, we just talked about them here a few minutes ago, John, with DriveBender, they are working on a cloud storage federation application, whatever, where you can tie your Dropbox, your SkyDrive, your Box, your Copy, and it'll stitch them all together and present it to you like one cloud volume, so you could spread those files across those. That's at least what it appears to be. Nobody's seen anything from them yet, but that's if you go on their site and look at, and I forget what they call that. I was just out there looking at it, but it is some cloud federation, because 5 gig isn't enough to do that much with. I mean, you can do some stuff with it, but 5 gig here and 5 gig there, 5 gig there. Imagine being able to stitch a few of those together and get some real data.
Jim, you like counterpoints, right? So just a little different perspective. What if you got 3 terabytes, way beyond gig? And that's the strange stuff I'm trying to do, building a homebrew personal family cloud where I want site-to-site backup, but instead of to some third party, it's to an ESXi host in mom's basement. So you can see where I'm going with it. Give myself some resilience. Encryption and all that, fine. And you can encrypt stuff you put up on a server somewhere, but how many years before it's decrypted? And, there's some stuff going on in the news lately that kind of makes you think, whoa, do we just lose Jim?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay. No, your screen, you're sharing your desk.
I switched that. Go ahead.
The audio is so quiet, I thought we dropped you. Anyhow, I'm just saying there's different approaches, and it's kind of fun to just cobble something together. It could be low tech, like always sync to do daily differentials between the two sites. So when very little changes in my home, it doesn't need to push much over the wire to the secondary location a few miles away, right? So just that's the kind of stuff people do at work, alternative data centers and DR recovery. And for me to kind of teach myself of that stuff at home in a practical way is fun. So there'll be stuff I'll be blogging about months to come, maybe August, September.
Well, and real quick, let me, so it's called Cloud Extender. That's what I was talking about from Division M. Right now, they just have a, hey, if you want to get on our beta list, sign up. And if you go to, I'll throw this in chat here so that you guys can go out and take a peek at that if you want. But you can sign up for that. I've been signed up for that for quite a while now, and I haven't heard from them. So we'll see how that's going. Paul, you know, one of the things you mentioned, I'll just a little bit of an update real quick since we're talking, you know, heavy backup on that. A little update on my brother. Many of you who follow us on the Facebook page, and by the way, if you head over to facebook.com/groups/theaverageguy.tv, and actually I created an easier way to get to that. So if you just go to theaverageguy.tv/Facebook, that'll take you right to our Facebook group now. So I got that done this week. And so an easy way to get out to our Facebook page and join. And if you do that, we're having a contest. If you join and we get to 200 people, we'll give somebody $100 in Amazon dollars. So who can't use 100 Amazon dollars, right? So my brother, on the Facebook page, we were talking about my brother lives in Colorado Springs in the Black Forest area. If you follow the news at all, you know that that whole area burned. And the fire started at 2 p.m. and they were evacuating him at 4. Well, you know, you don't really think about your computers at that point. You're thinking about getting the dogs loaded up in the car, grabbing some clothes, making sure the kids are taken care of. I mean, you're glad you're grabbing those essentials. And so I got on the horn and said, hey, you know, if you're not backing up your data off-site, you are just at a huge risk. And it's not like backing it up to an external drive is going to do the job. In that case, when those houses burn down, they burn to the ground. I mean, the firefighters, once it starts burning, they don't try and save them. They move on to the next house that they can save. And so you just lose everything. I mean, it completely burns to the ground at that point. And so you got to find a way, whether you're doing that, you know, we talk a lot about crash plan as being an option. Mosey's another one of those. And, you know, there's a bunch of them that are out there. Pick the one that works best for you with the price range where you want it. But you got to get it off site. And so either into the cloud or like we're talking about this own private cloud. We talked about crash plan. You can do it to grandma's, right? You could set up a PC at somebody else's house and move that data across the wire. You got to get something.
An easier first step is with Windows Server 2012 Essentials and the built-in VPN, you've got new capabilities, right? Your brother-in-law, sister-in-law, off-site laptops. The hard drives are not in your home. You're just the personal cloud for their daily backups.
True.
So you have resilience right there. You have multiple homes. If one of those houses is taken out, you're not losing everything.
Right.
Multiple copies of the data, just like you're saying.
No, right
simpler,
on.
Simpler than the crazy scheme I was talking about where I want to clone all those PC backups to a secondary site as well. That means the data would live in three personal private cloud locations. That gets tricky because we're talking about 3 terabytes a day. That's a lot. That's just me horsing around.
Yeah, not impossible, though. I mean, Mike Howard pushes at least that much up to his crash plan account, and it took a month or two for it to get there. But, you know, if you have an unlimited data, you have no data cap here in the United States or wherever, and you can move that data up. It just takes a while, but you can move that much data into the cloud.
But those backup files are huge. You wouldn't want your internet to be busy all night. So you have to have daily differential backups or rsync in the Unix world and in Windows, something like always sync, where only the delta or the change in those ginormous backup files are transmitted over the wire.
Right.
That's key. Otherwise, your internet would be busy, you know, day and night trying to catch up. Yep, good point.
Yeah, well, hey, guys, I'm trying something new real quick in the middle of the podcast. I want to try this out over the next couple weeks. We've been messing around with affiliate links as far as, you know, you guys do a great job of helping out the podcast at Amazon. So if you go to theaverageguy.tv/Amazon and you purchase something through that, we get a little commission for that, and I roll those back into giveaways and other stuff. We have a new affiliate link, and actually I was running this by Kevin Schoonover the other day, and we just created this new one at geeks.com. So Geeks, just like GEEKS, geeks.com. You know, they're a leading electronics site. They're a lot like Newegg, and they specialize in excess inventory, you know, manufacturers closeouts. You know, those weird PC parts that you might not be able to find in other places. Kevin's comment to me was that they're really good at cables. And so if you're buying, you know, if you're buying those network cables or whatever, they would be comparable to mono price. From that standpoint, I know a lot of us, when we go to buy cables, we buy them. There's really nowhere cheaper to buy them than at mono price. But to try this geeks.com. If you go out there, if you go to theaverageguy.tv/geeks, That will that there's a and actually they're running a special right now, a promo code ship deal, all caps, just ship deal, and you get free shipping on any new item from them that that they're doing. So get the details all out at theaverageguy.tv/geeks, and how can you not like to buy something from a place called geeks.com? So some good stuff. They are in Southern California. If you're in the state of California, you will pay sales tax. Free everywhere else. Give that a try, geeks.com. All right, John, anything else you wanted to cover? It seems like your connection stays stable for a few minutes.
Yeah. Well, I'm still online. The only thing I wanted to cover a little bit was you guys on the last podcast, you were talking about the microservers, the Gen 8 and so forth.
Yeah.
And I was just was wondering there if anybody had any news, if because, you know, I know that those machines, they had actually changed the CPUs, you know, before they like the final release. And
right.
So there was a couple of changes that was going there. And somebody was asking about whether or not they supported the 3 terabyte drives. And I guess the answer was yes. And I was just was wondering, does anybody know if, or even the listeners can comment, or the chat guys, if they support the new, like, UEFI BIOS, you know, so that you can actually boot from, let's say, a 3 terabyte drive? Because in the past, because you had the MBR boot, you know, your maximum drive, system drive was a 2 terabyte. So with the new EFI, you can have a 3 terabyte drive and higher. So I was wondering if that's if that was available, those drives. And then so that was one thing. And then the other thing that I noticed, somebody did indicate that there's an area that you could put an SSD drive. So I guess if you couldn't boot off a 3 terabyte, because, you know, I would like to if I had one of those servers, I would maximize that cage with the biggest drives that I could put in there. So if I was limited to my system drive being a 2 terabyte drive when I could have had a 3 or 4, then, well, what are my other options? So I guess in this case, if they give you a little hidden place to put a SSD drive, then you know, then you could say, you know, forget it, I'll just put a 60 gig SSD, boot off of that guy, and then put my 4 drives on the RAID. Because that was another good point that the guys had mentioned, was there's a built-in decent RAID card, because I know with the microservers and the previous generation, the N36, the 40, and the 54s, there I think you can only do RAID 0 or RAID 1, so you couldn't set up a RAID 5, which is like, you know, a drive, an extra drive in case one dies, and because, you know, the guys were saying, you know, how can you justify the higher price of this box? Because I think right out the gate it's like $450 or $550, whereas the microservers, like, you know, you can get them for $250, $300. Okay, you know, no hard drive, no CD drive. But the fact that you have, you know, built-in RAID functionality, you know, you can jump right into the RAID 5 and you don't have to play around with other cards. So I like that idea. So hopefully we'll continue to hear more of those and see somebody actually pick one up, and maybe you guys can have them on the podcast or something.
Paul, do you know? Have you been following the specs at all?
No, I don't know. The 3 terabyte boot question is always intriguing to me.
Well, we talked a little bit about that last week, I think on the home server show. We had John Stutzman on. He is by far the home, you know, the microserver expert in this. And I think if I remember correctly, the consensus was, yeah, the specs say 3 terabytes for now, but that's what it's certified at. So could you do 4? Well, we don't know yet. This thing is still... and. John, just a little bit of news. Somebody said, I think, was it via Twitter? So let me pull that up real quick so we give the right credit to the credit that's due. So one of the Twitter guys out on Home Server Show, Tuck Live, had mentioned that he saw they had updated the ship date from whenever to October 6th. So it looks like the shipping of those Gen 8 boxes has been delayed some. So I don't know if that's what they were anticipating. It seemed to me, I thought those were going to come out here pretty quick, within the next couple weeks, or, you know, even, you know, maybe as early as September. But it does look like maybe that's they're talking October. You know, the spec sheets are just leaked at this point. I know there was some real stuff that came out on those. Will anybody else in chat have any update? That's really a Stutzman question. He's really good at those.
He also caught me looking at a MediaSonic enclosure I have, and I was remembering when 3 terabyte drives came out, they said, okay, you know, it's supported in our 4-bay enclosure. You push a button and you have a RAID 5, and your MediaSonic $200 enclosure you know, becomes a single eSATA attached or USB 3.0 attached lump, a RAID 5 that you can format and do your thing with. So it was a big deal when they moved from 2 to 3 and said, yeah, supported. And then finally now you've got me thinking, maybe I should revisit and see if they also support 4 and if they continue to support firmware updates, right? Because that device is now like 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Under $200. I have two of them, and if anyone's interested for, you know, medium to low price storage enclosure, under $200, it's not a NAS, right? It's direct attached storage, no Ethernet cable. But I was on my site, tinkertry.com, search for MediaSonic. You'll see several articles about that thing. I've kicked the tires on it pretty good now and had it running for 2 years solid without any issues.
Okay.
But all right. Both backing up 2 terabytes, cloning them beyond 2 terabytes, things got interesting. Mm-hmm. Virtual machines beyond 2 terabytes, that's a whole other topic we never even touched on. There's so much about that 2 terabyte boundary.
That is the one drawback to 2011, right? It's got that 2 terabyte issue. That's going to go away here pretty quick. I mean, as we get to the newer versions, but we spend
phones in
2011 all the time. It's $40 or $35, and yet there is that 2 terabyte limit. It probably bites maybe half or less of the people that get it. I mean, I know I'm a guy. I got 300 or 400 gig worth of backup or of data. That's enough. I never have any problem. My home server sits behind me and just runs away without any issues, and I don't run into those problems, but certainly folks have more. John, we didn't get any information from the chat on that. I would say why wouldn't they be UEFI? I mean, you would think that's a new board. I mean, aren't they all shipping with that at this point?
Yeah, well, that's the thing is, when they give you the specs, like you guys said, there's that ILO chip or something, and you know, you can see that they kind of beefed it up, and it's, I think the memory is quicker and stuff, so it's it should be a modern OS board, 64-bit.
Yeah, I would think so.
Give us the things. You know, yeah. Again, like I said,
nice
if it doesn't work, if it doesn't work, then just throw your OS. Back in the day when we were first talking about it, don't spend your money on a SSD drive, for your OS. But now where you can get some of these small, even these mSATA, these tiny little SSD cards, they're like they're not in a case, but you could put them on like on a power connector, and you can get like a little adapter. You can hide that thing. It's only like 2 inches by 4 inches or something. You can get one 30 gigs or 60 gig, just, and in a box like that, you can just hide it somewhere and then boot right off of that, and that'll call it a day. But I was just wondering if it was had the more modern UEFI boot. And then that's something else we'll have to, once somebody gets their hands on that, the BIOS, we'll have to send it Christian's way and see if he can unlock something on there.
We talked about that with him, and they're getting harder. He was making some indication that to get into these, they've got some, they're really making it a lot more sophisticated to get in there and change, at the BIOS level. So yeah, John, interesting to see. Go ahead.
John Stott's been talking about that. It was particularly interesting. I only got, I think, 2/3 of the episode. But so you're saying, he never actually brought up the UEFI topic. But you're right. It's a new board. He mentioned ILO, right? Or Integrated Lights Out. Or, the IBM's equivalent of RSA adapters or IMN, which I've used quite a bit, too. And, throwing that stuff in there would be kind of interesting.
Makes it
easier when you're nowhere near the machine, right?
Just for my listeners, in case you're not on the home server show, we've gone over this ad nauseum over there
a
little bit.
Nice picture, yeah.
Let me bring that up. That's the new Gen 8, and a whole different design from the 54s and the 40s and the 36s that we've talked about, but still same goodness, and I think this is going to retail at $449 out the door. Doesn't look like you're going to get them till October now, and that's unconfirmed. I don't know that for sure, but the base model, at least $449. I imagine those things will come down pretty fast too once they start selling them. HP has been good to us. That kind of revived the home server community. I mean, it was not look, guys, a couple years ago it was not looking good. I mean, maybe even a year ago, it was like, what are we gonna do? There's nothing out there. They've killed the product. And all of a sudden, this microserver comes along and kind of breathes new life into the home server community.
And looks so, like it'll be out a few months before R2, huh? But that's okay.
Yeah, maybe so.
At least with 2012 would be better than 2011 pre-bundled. That'd be cool. But
the price
could be an issue. Yeah,
guys, let's. Paul, I know we want to talk about R2, so let's save that for a second. Is anything you want to talk about before we make our way into R2?
Well, we were going to touch upon UR2 or update release.
Yeah, you guys want to talk about that a little bit? I have
update
really
roll up. Update roll up too. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I have really not dug into that. Have either one of you guys done that?
I have. The release notes are not that exciting or long. I'll throw it in the live stream. They'll see it in a minute, I guess. We got that buffer. But update rollout 2, yeah, the updates, the list of fixes are not that extensive. They look mostly about Office 365, which I'm not actually using on my home server. The install was fairly uneventful for most people, although the forum started filling with some people with the automatic client push that it does, unlike 2011 or older versions. You shouldn't have to click anything on the client machines. And occasionally people have trouble with the client connector no longer finding the mothership, the backup server, after that. But I didn't experience that.
Yeah, I think it also required a reboot, right?
It sure did. So yeah. A little annoying, right? So on the server, it hung out there for 2 days. Paul Thorat blogged about it. 2 days later, I went in and said, okay, I'm going to kick it now and let it reboot. So it didn't forcibly do anything on the server because I didn't let it wait long enough. I'm not sure if it actually ever forces it on you. Do you know, John? Is yours in the... patch yours yet? Or?
No, see, I didn't patch my 2012 Essentials. Well, I installed it. What did I do? Yes, I installed it, but I actually don't have the connector running. Like, I didn't install the connector on my PC.
Okay.
So I got an old EX470, Paul. An EX470, my God. Running Server 2012 Essentials. Yeah, an old beast there. And it's going, you know. Lights don't work. The cage lights don't work, obviously, because that's a HP driver. But because I have my Western Digital running storage server 2008 R2, and, you know, with those two S's, you can't install both connectors, right? You can't have one connector for one server. Only in version 1 you can hack. There's a hack I've done it. You can have the modern and the old, but you can't have, like, let's say a Windows Home Server 2011 and storage and, let's say, Server 2012 Essentials. You can't put them together, so I'm choosing to use my Western Digital. But I did add the update, you know, to the server with a remote desktop connection, and it took it. It went good. You know, it's like you said, it's a bit uneventful. It's like nothing. It's like, all right, thanks for the update, but it's like, see, one of the things I don't like about the Server Essentials, I found that it was a bit of an unfinished product. Like, sometimes, like you said, you know, calling the mothership, sometimes people would reboot their PCs and the launchpad would come up and you would get the little circle going saying, you know, I don't see the PC, and you've written a few posts about the DNS issue and stuff like that. And I say, you know, this stuff is, it's still, like, broken. And
yeah, that DNS issue
reported,
they promised to fix, and they didn't do it, yeah.
So hopefully maybe they're kind of like, you know, we're going to do a little patches, but we're not putting all our eggs in that basket. We're already, you know, we've moved on to, you know, the R2 version. So it's like, you know, let's really get that baked. So hopefully when that comes out there, that'll be baked.
A couple of things as you told that story. You mentioned the LEDs. Now, if you fixed the LED and had a driver, you know what? They're probably solid on. The thing's on its knees, right? It's probably paging and the hard drive's on all day and night, right? But anyhow, that's cool that you have that running on there. But what I was asking is more, is the Windows update, you know, just queuing up that update rollup too. It's just hanging out there, and it's not forcing it on you, right? You have to click something before it's going to do it and reboot. Or is it going to time out, and you're going to show up in a week, and there it is. It's patched. Not sure. I didn't actually research that. I don't know.
And I'm not sure. Was there I'm not sure if they were referring to that one. Was there like a beta out? Because I remember reading something that somebody said that if you had the sort of like the pre-release or the beta or something, you would have to uninstall it to be able to get the new one, like, automatically, or for it to go through.
Oh.
I'm not sure if, or maybe that was some MVP guys, or maybe that was just, you know, some people that's, because sometimes they send that software out, right, and they tell you know, go try, go to, you know, connect to a Microsoft site and, you know, try to, like, the beta.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something, you know, I guess some folks, if they did run the beta, I would say if you have the beta and you didn't get the update, you know, or try to download and install the update and see how it goes. See if you get a warning.
Okay.
I think that might be an issue. I'm not sure if it was exactly with that version of Server 2012 Essentials update rollup 2, but that's something to think about.
Yeah, you know, you touched upon something, John, that DNS issue, right? So Jim, it sounds like an arcane, obscure thing, but actually many thousands of people have read it on the Home Server Show forums. It keeps hitting. If you skip a domain join when you built your Windows Server 2012 box, Windows Server 2012 Essentials,
there you go.
You built that server, and you connected your client PCs. If you went and did that little registry hack from Microsoft, not really a hack, just a minor tweak, and then you just do a normal install. it's way faster. It never joins a domain, right? It just stays in workgroup mode. And boom, you're doing daily backups. And you can still see network shares, and there seems to be no side effects. You know, some people are okay with that scheme. Fine. However, the thing that it broke that we identified, you know, a year ago, my article was September 9th, 2012, is DNS. Those clients, like my sister-in-law's machine or someone's outside of my house, it's connected, it's doing its daily backups, but boy, if my Windows Server 2012 Essentials box is shut down for whatever reason, her laptop is pointing to the IP address of my down server for surfing, and that's the DNS fix I'm talking about. You fix it, you patch it, you say, oh, I don't want a hard-coded IP, you know, 10.10.10.100 or whatever you called your home server. You just go back and you say DHCP, and then the person who doesn't live in your home is now surfing the web. 2 minutes later or 20 minutes later, a service kicks in and changes it right back again. It breaks it again, and it now says internet lost, and they're like, I can't surf the web and call on you, right? So that's a nasty issue reported almost a year ago. Microsoft Connect gave me some hope and responded to my bug report there or feature request, whatever you want to call it, and said, yeah, we're going to fix it in the next release. But they didn't fix it in February, and they didn't fix it last week, unfortunately. So
maybe someday.
So yeah, so it's great they gave us that tweak.
R2, it's in the
exactly
the R2 version that'll be, unless it's something that Microsoft is kind of like, because I've heard some guys talking saying like, this is the way Microsoft wants to, like, I don't know, maybe like do things now the new way, or maybe this is more efficient, and stop trying to go back to the old way. This may be the right way. It's like, you don't know what you want. We're gonna tell you what you want, you know. So maybe sure. Maybe they have some reason for kind of doing that. I don't know, but you know, like everything, you know, it's like if IT guys, professional, you know, you're used to setting up things a certain way, and then you rely on it working this way, then you move on to the next project or the next phase of whatever you have to do. You know, you don't want to have to keep jumping back, like in this case, like you say, that service runs again, and then whatever you just patched, it kind of puts it back to what it was. So they should, you know, they should give you the option either turn that on or turn that off, and there you go. You know, there's a recommended way, but you know, this is at least give you the option to turn that on or off.
Yeah, and don't get us wrong, right? We're relieved that Microsoft offered that little tiny tweak so that domain-joined laptops can be backed up by your home server. That's key. You can just treat them like a work remote. Treat them like Windows Server 2011 did, and the version 1 did. You didn't have to go through the domain join, right? You could just back it up. So it made 2012, you know, fit right in an environment like mine that's been running for years already, happily. But the big bug was that service, and that was fun to discover. Oh, I just, you know, snuck a look through the service list and saw, hey, there's a service called Network something or other with the Windows Server name in it. I stopped it, and the problem stopped cropping up on me. So that was just fun to help people with that. It made the wait for Microsoft to maybe fix it someday longer. And like you said, maybe they're not going to fix it. They're going to wait till R2. Either way, that was key for me, some of the machines I wanted to back up. And I know that I don't want to get into the whole workgroup model and Active Directory. We don't have Christian here tonight. He'll be all over you. And Michael Martis and others. I'd get an earful. But anyhow, so you asked, what do I want to talk about? That was one thing, DNS fix. Okay. It's just a big article. It's popular on, you know, Home Server Show forums and my site. The next one is just a sneak peek. So having used this with 12 laptops being backed up and desktops being backed up daily with about 4 or 5 terabytes of daily PC backups, I've used Windows Server 2012 Essentials. You heard what my heart just said, Home Server.
I know.
It's
hard to change. It's hard to change that. I still have to think every time, Windows Server 2012. And now with R2, it's going to be Windows Server 2012 R2 Essentials. I want to say Essentials R2, so it's going to be
actually,
R2.
So anyhow, back to Windows Server 2012 Essentials and a bit of, you know, months under the belt with using it. Yeah, I've got some stories to tell. And once in a while, we've all seen event log crop up with something ugly, and we all ignore it in Windows. That's been true for, you know, since Windows NT in the late 90s. Well, you remember the reports that you can add? It's that lovely add-in from Microsoft. So, John, you're nodding your head. Yeah, and Jim. So the reports you can add to your Windows Server 2012 Essentials. It's nice. You get a daily email. You look at your phone in the morning or whatever, and it says what happened overnight. DFS or corruption suspected, or, you know, you got to clean up something and run some command. That stuff started creeping up on me. So I kind of wrote them down. They've been sitting in my drafts folder for 4 months. Someday they'll see the light of day. But I'm kind of working on a doozy of an article of the stuff you don't see people talking about much, the dirty little secrets and how you clean it up. So I try to record videos each time I clean up one of these goofy errors that show up, just to help settle people down that, you know, that the machine hasn't died, it hasn't corrupted the database yet, all my backups are still happening daily. It's been pretty good. There's just been a few rough edges that I plan to document at some point. So stay tuned, and all this is at my super guide section. So tinkertry.com, click on the super guides button, and boom, you'll see a Windows Server 2012 Essentials story that just keeps unfolding and growing. And it's got 4 or 5 blog posts I've already done about the product. So,
Paul, you must see that error, unless it's just me, because, you know, I'm a kind of, you know, crazy kind of guy banging on that server. Like I said, I find sometimes Server 2012 Essentials is not fully baked, and I would get an error in the alerts, and it would say, "What was it? The best practices." We kind of give you like an error.
BPA, so best practices analyzer. Yeah.
Get your alerts saying best practices alerts. You got a problem. Like, we did 80 checks. You got a problem, but they don't tell you what your problem is. It's like, go back into the dashboard, and then, you know, go out, I don't know, on maybe computers backups, and then run the best practices analyzer, and then it'll scan, and then it'll come back, and it gives me some kind of cryptic message, and I don't know what to do. And, like, you know, suddenly they do have the, I think, ignore, delete, or whatever, but every once in a while these sort of like crazy cryptic messages come up, and this is why sometimes I'm saying, you know, it's nice. I like Essentials where it kind of brought in the media stuff from Windows Home Server 2011, and it brought the domain stuff from Small Business Server 2011 Essentials. It brought some of that stuff together. It's the new, I don't like the new UI, but at least it brought some of that stuff together, but I find it's a little bit buggy. So have you ever come across that area?
Not that particular one. We've got Rennie in chat reminding us of the computer monitoring error. That makes all of our hearts sink when you remember that one. Yeah. But flash forwarded today on 2012 Essentials, I get client computer did not back up successfully. That's fine. You get that all the time for various reasons, a laptop being unplugged at night so it's not going to wake up and kill its own battery, right? That's fine. But a scheduled cleanup task for client computer backup did not finish successfully. And it'll say something like, I haven't been able to run that for at least 2 or 3 weeks, right? It's supposed to run it every week. That kind of stuff gets a little annoying. Those are the rough edges you're talking about, John. So I'm trying to kind of polish those edges, record them as I go, and I've probably found 4 or 5 of those rough edges. None of them fatal, though. Still just glad the product's alive and keeping me backed up for years, right? But yeah, these little rough edges, like you said, it kind of took a step back from 2011 to 2012, and it's a little chattier now. It's kind of expecting you to be more of an IT guy and not so much the home server guy.
Well, that's for sure, right? They've really removed a lot of that from us.
Yep.
It's supposed to do that. Let's talk a little bit about R2, because I don't want to run out of time before we do that. And, you know, we're speculating at this point. Paul, you've got a great post over on your site about it. I haven't spent the time, you know, kind of, I'll throw that in the chat so folks have it. I haven't spent a lot of time looking at it. I am fairly interested in a few things that are coming with R2. So much so, I'm actually going to hold off. If you've been following the show at all, you know, I've been building this VM box over the last couple weeks with some help of you guys out there. Kevin Schoonover, of course, giving me some RAM and some drives. I've been sharing those drive benchmarks and such. But I was going to put 2012 on it, 2012 Essentials on it, and then with the announcement of R2, I might just hold off. I got a pretty busy summer and fall.
It's a good one, Jim. Yeah, I'll just wait.
Yeah, there's good news.
They're rolling out those server products. They're just rolling out.
they're coming fast, John. You know, it's coming. So the one in particular, I think, I mean, let's just talk about, I think what I'm excited about is, one, we get Hyper-V on Essentials in R2, and two, we get 100 client machines on there, or devices, right? Isn't that the way they're phrasing it, 100 devices?
Yeah, John, you were typing that in your show notes earlier, right? That was what you were thinking about. And you wrote users/devices.
Yeah, because I know one of the things I've seen, I got to give Paul Thurrott some credit, because, you know, sometimes people talk about some of the stuff he wrote, but they never say, hey, thanks, Paul. So I got to say. So,
good, good job, John.
You mean The Verge? He's always making fun of that, right? They forget to credit him.
Good guy. So I think on his article, he was talking about you can connect, like, even though it's a server product, they kind of want it to be like sort of your main your main go-to place where you can set up, because they're trying to do that integration with the Office 365, the subscriptions and all of that. So you'll go to your server when you couldn't create the user, this and that, you'll be able to connect, create your Office 365 username and accounts and all of that, activate that. So then that brings you to where if you connected a, in, like Jim says, devices, if you connected, let's say, an iPhone or a tablet or even an Android device, a phone or whatever, you can create your Office 365 accounts through that dashboard, and then you can like sort of like lock the lock or how is it wipe? Yeah, you can wipe the phones. You can maybe lock them out. And so they're giving you some kind of functionality that, you know, we haven't seen in the past with Home Server or the Server Essentials and stuff like that. So I guess that's where that kind of starts to, you know, you'll start to eat up your devices. This is why, it's, you know, when you were talking 25, it's not just 25 PCs. We're talking about phones and stuff. So imagine if you had a company of 25 people, and now those 25 people, they got their, you know, their PCs. Maybe they got their laptop that they're bringing home. Then they got their phone, or they got their Android. They got their tablet, this and that. So it's like, you know, is this going to be a nice central place that all this stuff is going to kind of, you know, work together and stuff? So that's where I see some kind of stuff coming there. Yeah.
And for me in a home lab, VMs, right? It's convenient to back up virtual machines right alongside their physical counterparts. Let me word that clear. Let's say a laptop breaks. The laptop itself dies, needs service. I take my brother-in-law's hard drive out. I shove it in the server, and he runs a virtual copy while his laptop's out for a week. He's running that hard drive booted in a VM under ESXi. It would work under Hyper-V2. And then when the laptop comes back, I show the hard drive back in, hand him back the laptop. He's basically never out of service. That kind of stuff's really practical. And having the ability to have all of those devices that occasionally touch my home network just back up and have that list go well beyond 10 devices, which I exceeded years ago, is awesome. Yeah, I'm glad they broke that 10 machine barrier. As John just hit it, wow, 100. I worry about scalability because there's been some backup speed problems. 2012 Essentials is good at backing up. 2012 Essentials is not great at restoring. Mm. It's 4 or 5 times slower than anything like a Cronus or Ghost. So I'll be honest, that's kind of, it's not an Achilles heel, but it's more like if you're restoring a laptop that's a big, you know, 1 terabyte drive in there and it's pretty full, that thing's going to take hours. Just go to bed and pick it up in the morning. That's the bad thing. So the good news is you're not taking up gobs of storage. You know, you don't need 10 terabytes to back up 10 1-terabyte laptops. You only need like 2 terabytes because it dedupes it, really. So that's a huge plus. The minus is when you go to restore, it's got to do all that math and number crunching and consolidation, and it takes a while.
Yeah, it's got to unwind that data.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
So imagine 100 computers somewhere. Yeah.
I never see Microsoft list how many terabytes is realistic, and it seems I'm pushing my limits at 5 terabytes. For daily PC backups, you guys remember how excited I was when I first played with the beta? How fast it was at backups and restores. It's back in its knees at 5 terabytes of daily PC backups. Not quite as bad as 2011. That was much worse. But it's still not as fast as V1. So there's some little dirt there. Yeah.
Do you have any Macs on your network?
I do. That's a fix in UR2. Is that why you're asking, John?
Well,
you reminded me.
Well, the thing is, you know, server, even the, you know, not the R2, but the existing one now, server 2012. You know, you can install the connector, and it's supposed to be able to back up Macs, right? You know, right to. I don't know how it does. It sets up a what kind of drive there, like a
Time Machine.
Yeah, Time Machine, right? So, because I know you can set up the connector, yeah, and then I think you do get a dashboard on there, right?
You get a dashboard and not much else. So I tried it on, I waited for, remember there was a bug a year ago where dashboard, they used the same word and it overwrote some file on the OS 10 and you were in trouble. So I waited for that to shake out and I tried it again this spring after update rollup 1 for 2012 Essentials. And you know what, the Mac Mini, when it was booted to its OS 10, it just gave me a launchpad. It doesn't set up Time Machine. You have to tweak and hack and try to make it present a Windows network share, present that to the OS 10 operating system as a Time Machine backup target. If you do that magic, then you might get it working, but basically it doesn't seem to do the daily backups. That was the dirty secret, and I was disappointed when I tried it. I had researched it, and now I know why people weren't talking about it, because it doesn't really work. So that's what got me intrigued on update rollup 2. There's just one sentence in there. It says major update that is added by this update. Improvement. Add support for the Port Bonjour feature of Mac Connector to Windows Server 2012 Essentials. I don't really know what that means, but it makes me slightly hopeful. When you Google around, you'll just see Paul Thurrott's article quoted over and over with RSS skimmers. So I don't know, but it makes me think, oh, there's another weekend thing to try. Maybe they actually fixed something there.
Because it would be nice to see that.
It would.
Because people have that mixed home network, you know, Macs and
yeah.
So it would be nice to see that you can back up that. And like you say, maybe a VM. Who knows if you want to have your Mac VM and stuff. That's another big thing, right?
It's a small business application, John, right? Bring your mic up again for me a little bit. That's another small – thank you. It's another small business application, right? Because you're more likely to have that Mac-PC combo, I think, in a small business than you may find it in most homes. And I could be wrong on that.
Absolutely.
I'd be wrong. But I think the small business, you know, is especially in that 25 range, you're probably going to have a designer in there if it's an IT shop, and they're going to be running Macs, and it needs to work.
So, yeah, if someone wants to Google around and find out what Port Bonjour feature is, Microsoft certainly hasn't documented as far as I can tell. Yeah, but it does intrigue me, and obviously I'll let folks know if I get it working.
Yeah.
But thank you for bringing that up, John. That might be the sleeper hit of this update roll-up, too, or a reason for it, because they call it major. Why would they call it major? I don't know, but I'm looking forward to finding out.
Sometimes they use marketing word.
True, and I'll be sorely disappointed. Okay, so I should expect nothing, and I'll be very happy if it works.
You know what, Paul? I got to throw in a kudos to Western Digital. They have two thumbs up. Western Digital, my Western Digital DX4000, which is running Server 2008 R2 Essentials. That's a long name, right?
I think you skipped a word or two, but it's still long.
I gotta take a drink there. It's like, holy mackerel! Like, you should put the names on like speed dial.
Can you say it twice?
So these guys, Western Digital, they created an add-in that creates an iSCSI drive. You actually allocate some parts on your hard drive. You allocate hard drive space on your server. And then you install the connector, the Mac, whatever. And they wrote like a, you know, it's a Mac, what is their extension? DRM, DRG, or something like that. You install this file and
DMG.
Okay, there you go. Thank you. And you install that file and, you know, you just do like server/connect and you know how it is with the server stuff. Anyway, you install, boom, and they've got that going there. It's not available in Windows Home Server 2011 and you know, we're kind of like cobbling along in Server 2012 Essentials, and Western Digital was able to do like what HP did back in the day with the HP MediaSmart server. So I'm able to back up my daughter's MacBook Pro and have the console and get some of the add-ins and stuff. So that's pretty good. So again, when this R2, I hope they kind of clean that all up and we have some good good connection there, good coexistence.
Yeah, and speaking of which, the product manager Fabricius, what's his name? Microsoft. He's got a series of videos right there all about his current 2012 Essentials product, which is pretty cool.
See, who's that, Michael Leeworthy?
No. Let me get the spelling of his name.
Because I heard his name come up. Michael Leeworthy, Jim. Michael Leeworthy. This guy's like synonymous. He's the guy that broke the news to us that, you know, what did he say? The Windows, Windows Home Server. How did he say? He said that it was, Windows Home Server 20, Windows Home Server version 1 was dead. I think that's what was the news he came up with, because that's it. We're going
version 1?
Yeah.
Was it?
I think that's what he said.
Okay.
Anyhow, I'll get this link.
I have trouble remembering my own children. So,
in my list of Google Pluses from the last week, I'll have that link for the video, and I'll throw it in chat momentarily.
Very cool. Very cool.
So you wanted to go forward and talk about R2 a little more, and I think those are the highlights, right?
I think so. I mean, it's coming. Let's just mention it's coming on June 26th. At this point, we should see a copy with all the other, you know, the beta stuff. Most of that should roll forward with the Windows Blue stuff that's coming out. So they do have, and I'll throw this in chat as well. It'll be in the show notes. Paul, you highlighted it in your article. They do have a page you can go to and sign up to be notified when it's available. So if you want to head out there, oops, I probably did the wrong thing.
Exactly. The link you sent earlier, it's got that link in there too.
Yeah.
So you threw it in the live stream already.
Perfect. I did.
Sign up to be notified, but basically it sounds like you're going to get an email at, what time is it? East Coast, Microsoft does it. Is it 4 p.m., 1 p.m. Pacific time, I think they do their thing?
I think that's what it is.
It's almost always the same time of day, right?
Yeah, they drop
John,
it
you're laughing. Do you remember?
No, I just looked up. I just looked up Michael Leeworthy, Windows Home Server. It says he's the guy that told the public that the drive extender was gone.
Oh, drive extender, right. Yeah, we're killing drive extenders. God, that started a firestorm like you would not believe. Yeah.
The jokes were like, here he is, you know, they hired a guy, and on Friday night, just as they're leaving out the office, can you just release this information to the public? Just tell them that there's no driving center. Okay, bye, have a good weekend, ciao. Next thing you know.
Yeah. An explosion of venom and anger in the home server community, for sure.
I just share the video link in the live stream.
It's a series. Paul, do me a favor, too. Yep. You're so good at this. After the show, if you backtrack on some of those links for me, too, in the show notes, it'd be great.
Yeah, I'm trying not to hit too many on the live stream. Yeah. I promise to not spam them too much, but I've got the show notes pretty much built already as we're talking.
Cool.
Right in the Google.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, we didn't talk a lot about it. You kind of alluded to it, and I mentioned it. Hyper-V, of course, is going to come in Essentials, and I think that's great. Today, if you want Hyper-V, you got to go over to Standard, and you have to install Essentials, and you could do that. That's how my configuration is right now. I've set up Standard, and we'll run the Hyper-V role, and then put Essentials on it. But basically, now you'll be able to run 2-for-1, which will be great. You can use Essentials as your base. I think that makes a better home server setup than all the hoops you got to jump through to get it, the other way before. So, I think this is a little bit of a throwback to the home server community in a lot of ways. I mean, I think they have done some things for us. Now, it'll be interesting to see how the pricing changes with R2. And if we still see the $425 price point, which I know is about $3-something, and if you know somebody at Microsoft, you can get a little cheaper than that. But I wonder if that pricing will change as they... I'm going to say no. I think they're just going to roll forward with it, and it should be fairly similar. I think they're throwing us a bone with Hyper-V. I don't know. You guys' thoughts?
Yeah, you're right. What you're talking about, Hyper-V, I think some of the MVP guys were chatting about that. And I think even Mary Jo Foley, let's give her some kudos. I think she was saying that as far as businesses, they were saying something like, if you set up Windows Server R2 2012 in a VM, like, then after when you're going to want to back up your server, because Microsoft is trying to do all this cloud stuff or whatever, they say you'll be able to back up your server to a Windows Azure server, and you're going to have some kind of functionality so they're saying that basically if you do set up your server in a VM, the server itself, then that's going to give you some other flexibility and benefits and stuff. And I don't know, like, let's say if the server kind of goes down, you'll be able to, flip a switch and have another server at another location, virtualizing your server and like Paul was saying with his laptop.
It's kind of doing it. Yeah, it's doing it at the server level. It's exactly what Paul was exactly talking about at the server level.
It's hinting where they seem to be going, right? Yeah. They want you to use Hyper-V and want you to use those VMs, and it becomes a prerequisite for some of their offerings.
Right.
It's seducing you.
Yeah.
It might be there might be more announcements like that. No, I agree. That was the other key point that we forgot to talk about. Thank you, John.
That was a good point.
That's a big one. Including Hyper-V, but also including Hyper-V requirements for some of the interesting stuff. Any of you ever figured out the price for Azure? I mean, if we're in MSDN or TechNet, you don't really know. When you click in a little wizard and then it starts talking about money, you don't know what it would cost. I have no idea.
It's pretty expensive. It's pretty.
Yeah, I mean,
I've gone through the wizard to set some stuff up. I mean, to run anything is pretty. There's a little wizard that you can go through just to kind of set up your basic environment in there. It's not cheap, Paul. I mean, it's like $5,000. I mean, it starts at like $5,000. So there's a minimum. I think this is what I saw. I think it's a minimum of $5,000. You can't just go order. And I could be wrong here. I'll have to go back and take a look. But this is what I remember. Because I was going to go try. They have a free trial that you can try and do some other stuff. And then I thought, I wonder how expensive this stuff is to order. So I actually put an order in, and it was like minimum $5,000. I'm like, are you kidding me? So
I just remind myself, I'm looking at the lower third. We're on the average guy TV, not the average rich guy TV, right?
For sure. It's expensive. I think it's out of reach for us. Enthusiast, right? We're not going to go that way. We still need to do this stuff, set it up here. I think it's, Azure is really designed for the enterprise.
I hope they do give this, take some advice like from us and make the option where you don't have to do that domain join, where that'll kind of like be built in and you know, just like with the existing one, right? They had that you can install Server 2012, and then if you go beyond 25 users or something, you can change that license. You can buy a license, then it does that transmog, they called it, to go to the other one. So it would be nice if you were able to say, you know what? How about I set it up as like a Windows Home Server? You know, 25 users. Or give me the 25 user or 50 user limit or whatever. Charge me a certain price that I don't join a domain. And then if I do want the domain join license, you know, now I'll put in that license and then you can join the domain.
Yeah, that would be sweet. Yeah. If you could cut the domain part out automatically, not pay for it. Yep. No, you're right, John. It'd be great. And maybe 25 packs of devices. I like that idea. That's a good idea.
Just a summary point too. Like John said, we're hoping R2 doesn't change something dramatically. Maybe break or fork off, and suddenly you can't do the domain join, and that would be worrisome. Here I was being optimistic that they'll fix the DNS fix, but yeah, that would be a problem if that registry key thing goes away. One would hope what you're smiling and imagining would be instead of a registry key, like John hinted, you just have a checkbox. You want to join the domain or not? You say no, and it no longer tweaks your DNS, and it leaves your laptop alone in the network it lives in.
Yeah, for sure.
So that, because you don't need to surf through a home server when you're not doing a domain join.
Right.
I don't see any value on it. But anyhow, and you called, fanboy or whatever. Yeah, I've been cloning machines since 95 on token ring networks and IBM internal tools, and then it became Ghost in 97. It was a guy in New Zealand developing that thing. It was buggy. So, hallelujah, that's a lot of years in IT, cloning classrooms and watching bugs happen every 15-20% of the time. Some mystery error would bite you when you went to clone 16 classroom machines. Having a way to have a central backup with a reasonable product that dedupes it so you don't have a huge data store needed, that's the awesomeness. That's been true since V1. I mean, that's the key thing. That's why a guy like me cares about it, because we've been using clone tools since the mid-90s. Finally, you don't want to see this thing go away.
Well, it'll be great. I'm more encouraged, especially with some of the news of R2. I'm more encouraged about the home server show or the home server community and the home server show, for that matter of fact. I'm more encouraged that they. I really thought I mentioned this earlier in the show. I really thought we were done. To be honest, I was like, nah, they're in a weird kind of roundabout way, they have thrown us a ton of bones. HP has jumped on with these microservers. I'm encouraged by what R2 brings for our community. Many of us are using that through TechNet anyways, and so there's some, there's some a little affordable in that way. But there's some really good stuff coming, so I'm excited about it. We're going to wrap this up, guys. We're at about an hour 15, and I gotta kind of come in for a landing. We'll stay around a little bit in the post-show to talk some more about this, if you've got some more things you want to talk about. This being June 20th, 2013, it's going to release. We'll start seeing some of this stuff. You can actually get the bits starting late next week. We'll actually do a show next week around Windows 8.1, but maybe something will sneak in along the lines of R2 in Essentials and see what pops in. I really want to do this first look with the new bits being delivered on Wednesday. I'm hoping by Thursday at showtime, we've actually got some 8.1 machines up and running. We'll do a first look like we've done in the past and take a peek at that and see how that goes. So if you're listening to this live or you're listening to it before the 26th, I think that's the right date, before June 26th, that Wednesday, watch. You want to come back next Thursday, the 27th, and we'll have a good show. We need to put some folks together. And we'll be covering Windows 8.1 as well as maybe some Essentials R2, although I doubt I'll have time to put all of that together as we go forward. So guys, hang tight, hang around. Again, I'll remind folks, if they want to come out and listen to the live show, we are out here every Thursday night, just about every, maybe 50 out of 52 Thursday nights a year, out at theaverageguy.tv/live. Appreciate you listening. Like John said earlier, it's always good to thank the listeners. Always appreciate you guys. The numbers have been good and solid and are coming up, so I appreciate you guys listening each and every week. And if you want to join us to do that, there's all kinds of ways to subscribe to the show. You can do it through iTunes. By the way, if you're out on iTunes, just leave us a little review. That's always helpful. And all kinds of RSS stuff. I just changed those links on the page. So if you haven't been out to theaverageguy.tv in a while, take a look at that. A guy, Daniel J. Lewis, over at Audacity to Podcast, put together a nice little WordPress app that changed all of our link icons. It's really cool. So go out there, theaverageguy.tv, and get that checked out. If you would be kind enough to subscribe to us, I'm having a little race with Mike Howard. And by the way, let's just have our thoughts for Mike. Mike, we found out this week, Mike has kind of a really rare form of cancer, and so we'll just be, he put that out publicly on JPEG to Raw on their Facebook page, and I've been talking to him a couple times back and forth. He's in great spirits about it. I mean, it's big news. It's tough stuff, but prayers, thoughts, all that stuff that you want to do for Mike is greatly appreciated. He and his family are kind of dealing with the fallout of that right now, and so we appreciate that as well. But besides that, Mike and I are in a race on YouTube to see how many subscribers we can get. So if you head out to theaverageguy.tv/Facebook now and just subscribe, we don't get much spam, but it helps do things for us. So, well, if we get to 1,000 subscribers, we get some access to YouTube Live, which would be kind of cool. So if you would do that, that would be fantastic. I'll remind you, like I did early in the show, that we are giving away $100 from Amazon if you when we hit the 200 mark in the Facebook group. So go to theaverageguy.tv/Facebook. And that you can join the group right there. Again, you don't get a lot of spam from that. You can shut it off if you want, but just join the group and be good to have you out there. A lot of guys talking about this stuff. If you have any questions, you can do that. And if you're the average guy, if you're the average tech person listening to the show, sorry about tonight. We got a little crazy on the technical stuff, but we're here for you as well. So you can post your questions out there on the Facebook group. I will also remind you that we are having the Home Server Show, Surface Geeks, Average Guy Meetup in Indianapolis, September 21st. If you haven't signed up for that, we got 90 slots, and about 35 or 6 of them are taken at this point. They will fill up. This is going to be a great meetup out in Indianapolis. Rich O'Neill, I'm going to pick Rich up at the airport. He's flying in from Maine to be a part of this. Mike Howard hopefully coming in from Atlanta, and a lot of other guys as well making their way in. I'll hopefully pick up some folks in Iowa. Maybe get Gordon to come down and pick him up. Bring him in. It should be a great show. September 21st, head out to homeservershow.com, and Dave has a post out there you can get signed up for on the Eventbrite page. And then last but not least, can't do a show without mentioning Drobo. I did start a new Google Plus group for Drobo owners. So, you know, I just picked up a 5N, and there's no group out there for Drobo owners. So I started one. If you want to, we've already got 9. I opened it last night. We already got 9 members. If you've got a Drobo or you want to be part of the Drobo community, Drobo locks down their support group pretty tight, and even though I've got some in over at Drobo, I just kind of wanted an open site. We could talk about that stuff without having to go through a firewall. So head out to Google Plus, just search Drobo owners, and that one, I could give you the link, but it's a big long one. It doesn't make sense. Just search for Drobo owners.
Hey Jim, if I raise my hand, I don't want to look like I'm waving goodbye. Quick comment, BYOB, a little cross promotion. So yeah. Mike Fauché and I are doing a live podcast this Sunday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. And we're talking about home automation. So you've got the full Fauché, where money's no object presentation, and then you've got me with more of the average guy presentation on what you can do for $129 to start automating your front porch lights and so forth. So
cool.
Little different direction for us. We're just horsing around on a Sunday evening.
You say live, us. Paul, but what does that mean?
Well, he might, I don't know. Hopefully he'll do some kind of stream. If he doesn't, I will.
Well, why don't you know the average guy could do it? I mean, ask him if he wants that.
And I will ask him. Yeah,
we could stream it live here at theaverageguy.tv.
So keep an eye on the BYOB section of the.
Very cool. And if you're listening to this sometime in the future, that of course we've got all the podcasts, both homeservershow.com and with BYOB as well. And of course we've got Home Tech here. And then Andrew Hunt and I have been doing Financial Tech. You might want to listen to that 15-minute podcast once a week out there on the site. You can just watch it on YouTube at work or whatever works for you. Andrew, just smartest young guy that I know around finance. And he's just doing a great job. And it's a great, I love recording the podcast every single week. So head out, Financial Tech. Give that a listen too. We'll go into the post show, and remember that if you're listening to the recorded version, you'll never get the post show because I don't put it in the record. Well, maybe bloopers, but I never put that. We got Zadler. We don't have a good Zadler blooper yet. So John, you're up in the post show for something crazy, but you only can hear the post show if you come out live, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, theaverageguy.tv/live. Next week. So, well, this will wrap it for the recorded version. We'll go into the post show. Guys, hang around a little bit and we can talk some more. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Are you a military guy? Do they have you do this when you're in Germany? Or
no.
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 Okay.
No, our blood was tainted because they'd give us all kinds of shots.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
When I went to Panama, we spent some time in Panama. You got to get malaria and typhoid and tetanus and then all kinds of weird jungle drugs. And we're supposed to go to Saudi, or we're supposed to go to Kuwait the first time, right? When Saddam went in the first time. And they gave us some kind of desert drugs that they're like, okay, there's no mercy. They just pump you full of that stuff. And when we were done, they were like, you can't give blood for 3 years.
Did you see that? You see, John?
No. Yeah, kind of like it.
They have, like, you know, those hats there that you have there, you know, and, and they put those two hats there with the hoses that go in, you know? Here, just walk around like this for a while. You'll be good.
So if anyone's listening, right, and can't see this, right, you got the transcutaneous injection, high pressure. First he goes with a whole water bottle to the neck. That was funny. And then he puts it up to his head like beer hats, right?
Yeah,
that was
like great, John. The beer.
Don't worry about it.
You need to capture the visual and audio form for your outtakes.
Well, this won't make anything because, well, I might make this. This might make that. That will probably make.
That was good.
that'll make the reel, the blooper reel for sure.